we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, February 16th, 2018. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Amira Lee.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, everyone. So tomorrow, February 17th, is World Pangolin Day. That's pangolin, not penguin. Now, many people in this part of the world don't even know what pangolins are, but the reason there's a whole day dedicated to them is because their species is gravely threatened by poaching and habitat loss. Our feature interview today is with Nikki Wright, Executive Director of the African Pangolin Working Group. She'll be telling us all about these special animals and about her experiences rescuing and rehabilitating them, as well as imparting advice on what we can do to help save them. So that's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. Our first interview coming up in about 10 minutes is with Tomi Makanjuola, the writer and vegan chef behind the blog The Vegan Nigerian. Tomi has been publishing delicious vegan Nigerian recipes on her blog and YouTube channel for the past 5 years, and she'll be speaking with us about her vegan journey and about cooking beloved traditional dishes vegan style. But first, Amir, you had some thoughts to share with us on the Chinese New Year, Year of the Dog.
Yeah, we were actually talking about it a little bit before the show, and then we didn't really know when Chinese New Year is, and I looked it up before the show started, and it's actually today, so happy Chinese New Year.
Yay!
And as you were saying, it is the Year of the Dog, and I mean, I can't imagine anybody out there listening who doesn't like dogs. Like, I don't know anybody myself who doesn't like dogs, although for a long time I didn't like dogs, so I had bad experiences with them growing up and kind of like got chased by a couple dogs, and it kind of traumatized me for a while, after I warmed up to them, I realized that they're amazing. Dogs are amazing. Yeah. So it is the Year of the Dog, but I have a feeling that as this year goes by, we're going to hear a lot of stories about dogs that aren't necessarily going to be the happiest stories about dogs. We were talking again about it before the show, and right now the South Korean Olympics are going on, and I had no idea this happened in South Korea until we were again discussing this before the show, but obviously what made big headlines last year was the Yulin Dog Meat Festival in China. Mm-hmm. And there's a story emerging now from South Korea that there is a dog meat trade there even, and Sinead had some research she dug up about it. There's a CNN article apparently about it recently.
Yeah, and that doesn't always happen. You know, animal cruelty features on CNN.
No.
So that was cool to see, but they sort of say, okay, so here's all this Olympic excitement going on in South Korea. Meanwhile, there's this sinister practice of dogs being slaughtered for their meat at more than 17,000 dog meat farms around South Korea. So, yeah, it's a big thing there, and there's a lot of outrage in North America. They actually shut down some of the dog meat markets in South Korea were shut down leading up to the Olympics just to avoid international outrage and criticism. Mm-hmm. And but as we were discussing, there's some hypocrisy to the criticism of the dog trade, the things that they describe in this article. And there's a video too. They interview a farmer on one of these farms, and there are dogs in cages, and this farmer is saying, look, there are dogs for pets. I have a pet dog at home, he says, and mm-hmm. who I love. And there are dogs for meat, and people need to learn the difference. Mm-hmm. And so here in Canada, of course, a lot of us hear that and we go, oh, well, that's absurd, because all dogs are dogs, and they all feel, and they all deserve consideration. And but what he said is exactly what we hear as animal advocates. We hear this all the time from mm-hmm. farmers of other animals, from farmers of pigs, cows, chickens, turkeys, any animal, then you will get the farmer saying, look, there are animals who you love and you look after, and there are animals who you use for food, and it's okay that they stay in these cages their whole lives, and it's okay that they're mistreated and they don't get any veterinary care or human attention or, you know, even companionship from their own species. They're just crammed together or alone in these horrible conditions. So I would just encourage, I would encourage anyone to look up that CNN piece, because it does have a lot of really good information, but also just look at it critically and think about how how you might be contributing to similar things to other animals here in Canada.
Yeah, it's not even just farmers who say stuff like that. It's everyday people. You know, people try to make a distinction between animals that we love and animals that we eat or, you know, exploit for other purposes, when really there's no relevant difference. It actually makes me think a lot about the Canada Goose issue, you know, with Canada Goose jackets, because the lining of the hoods or the trim on the hoods of those jackets is coyote fur, and people, I don't know, seem to have this idea that there's some huge difference between coyotes and domesticated dogs, when really they're very similar, you know.
Yeah, if it causes suffering and it's not necessary, then maybe rethink it.
It makes you wonder why there's this mental gap between the two, and I just thinking now as you were talking about it, that it's just, I think it's the way a lot of these animals are presented in terms of like packaging and that kind of thing. Like we look at like there's so many packages of meat that have like happy animals on them and that kind of thing, and there's this weird, again, mental gap about the way this animal is presented versus how a dog is presented. We never see in North America a dog presented like it's a piece of food, obviously, and again, for some people in South Korea, it's completely normal for this dog to be a piece of food. Whereas like, now you can think about like being in India, and you know, for a lot of people, a piece of beef there is, you know, considered very weird, because for a lot of people, cows are sacred animals out there. But yeah, it's really unfortunate that there is this hypocrisy, and it happens every year. There's always a story about, you know, some animal, like there was Cecil the lion, and everyone went crazy. Cecil the lion being killed. And obviously it's sad that Cecil the lion got shot by a hunter or whatever it was, but what's the difference between that and, again, the billions of animals that are killed in North America every year?
Yeah, exactly. It's this weird phenomenon, I guess, humans have this tendency to compartmentalize, and, you know, if an animal is an individual and has a name and stuff, then we seem to care more about them than, you know, the literally billions, trillions of nameless animals.
Yeah, in regards to South Korea, then at least there might be some change coming ahead for the dogs on the farms there. Because in the CNN piece, they say the leader of South Korea recently adopted a shelter dog rescued from a meat farm.
Wow.
Yeah, so President Moon Jae-in is now the proud owner, they say, guardian of a four-year-old mutt, the first quote-unquote meat dog to become a quote-unquote first dog. So, so that's something, and hopefully progress for dogs, and hopefully we can apply that same sort of extending compassion here to all animals.
That's amazing. Yeah, setting a good example. Yeah, and speaking of which, I think it's February 20th is Love Your Companion Animal Day, so that's coming up soon, and it's a good time to be thinking about that, be thinking about adopting and fostering shelter dogs and not buying them from breeders.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of dogs suffering in shelters and lack of housing. We'll get into that later.
There's a lot of great local rescues too, like right here in Vancouver, that you can go to if you wanted to get a dog that obviously is way better than going to a shop for a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Care Rescue on the show a while back, a few months ago. That's Care, C-A-A-R-E. And they're an awesome rescue organization in the Lower Mainland. And I also follow the Northwest Territories SPCA. I know that's a little ways away, but they transport dogs to Vancouver all the time for adoption. And they seem to have a lot of, like, puppies. I don't know. People have this idea that you can only get old dogs at shelters or something. But shelters are full of adorable little puppies if that's what you want. And, so that's, you know, it's great to follow those on Facebook if you are looking to adopt a dog or foster a dog. That's, so many in the area.
Yeah, but don't get a dog unless you can commit. A friend of mine was talking about this recently. Don't get a dog to fill some hole in your life and then move on, you know.
Right.
A lifetime commitment.
Yeah, it's at least a 10-year commitment, so that's very important. So yeah, should we move on to the news?
Yeah, all right. Well, continuing, yeah, we can segue out of that Olympic dog talk. There was a world champion figure skater named Megan Duhamel and her partner Eric Radford helped the Canadian team score gold this week at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, with their performance being described as flawless. So Megan Duhamel has been vegan since 2008, just like me.
Awesome.
and she also rescued a dog from the Korean dog trade ahead of the Olympics, with plans to bring another dog home to Canada that she plans to place with an adoptive family at the completion of this year's games. The win was also a milestone for her partner, Eric Radford, who is now the first openly gay figure skater to win gold at the Olympics. So,
really?
Yeah.
I was surprised by that, actually.
I know. I was a little surprised, too, but right on, you know?
Yeah.
And so congratulations to Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford for their gold medal for Canada at the Winter Olympics. And so for anyone out there who still thinks a vegan diet makes you weak, just go look up the ever-growing list of pro athletes who are winning medals and breaking records all over the world without consuming animal products. Mm-hmm. How about that?
It's fantastic.
Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, Megan Duhamel is also featured in this in this CNN piece, and she points out that any meat farming is wrong, whether it's cows, pigs, or dogs. Of course, in our culture in North America, slaughtering and eating dogs is so far from our reality, she says. We see dogs as companions and man's best friend. We can't imagine anything bad happening to our beloved pets. Mm. So yeah, you know, not only is she winning gold medals at the Olympics, but she is speaking out for animals as well.
Yeah,
which is,
using that very public platform. That's fantastic.
Yeah, which is great. And we had another vegan win another awesome award this past week. Canadian photographer Joanne MacArthur was named Wildlife Photographer of the Year last week by the Natural History Museum of London. The winning photo was of Pekin, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, Pekin the gorilla in the arms of her caretaker, Apollinaire Ndohu. Do again, hoping I didn't just, yeah. But it's a photo of this gorilla in the arms of her caretaker and the man who rescued her from poachers in Africa. And the photo is beautiful, and it was selected from 50,000 entries to create a list of 24, and then 20,000 voters chose Joanne MacArthur's photo as their favorite. So that's awesome. Congratulations to Joanne MacArthur. She told the BBC she's thankful that the image resonated with people, and she hopes it might inspire us all to care a little bit more about animals. And Joanne MacArthur is a friend of Animal Voices. We've had her on the show several times, and she's actually coming back to town next month to do a presentation of her work at Robson Square on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. Yeah.
Right. Oh, so, yeah, definitely check that out, because she's an amazing photographer and a wonderful activist, a wonderful person.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that event is put on by the SPCA and the Fur Bearers. So if you want to find more info, you can go to their websites. And an update on the Vancouver Aquarium, the ongoing battle between the aquarium and the Parks Board. Last week, the BC Supreme Court struck down the Park Board's bylaw that bans whales, dolphins, and porpoises from being held in captivity in city parks. This comes right after the aquarium announced it would stop keeping cetaceans in captivity. So even though it was a loss for whales in court, you'd think we could still celebrate, right? But that's not exactly the case. So local group No Whales in Captivity reports that the aquarium still plans to build a new exhibit for rescued dolphins, which is allowed in the park bylaw. And the problem is that the last three quote-unquote rescued dolphins were actually purchased and imported into the aquarium's show tank from Japan after performing for 10 years in Japanese aquariums. So that means that the aquarium can and will import so-called rescued dolphins from anywhere in the world to make sure that this new tank is full. Mm-hmm. So No Whales in Captivity has created a petition calling for no dolphin rescue display tanks at the Vancouver Aquarium. And you can't, and they're calling instead for a rescue pool to be built at the actual Marine Mammal Rescue Center, which receives less than 2% of the aquarium's revenues.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're asking for actual help for these true rescues. And you can sign that petition and learn more information at our website, animalvoices.org, vanaquafacts.org, and vancouveraquariumuncovered.com.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you, Sinead. So my first guest today is Nigerian-born and London, UK-based chef and writer Tomi Makanjuola, the brains and heart behind the fantastic blog The Vegan Nigerian. Hello, Tomi, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, yesterday was the five-year anniversary of your blog, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I'd love to hear about your vegan journey. So when did you become vegan and what compelled you to make the switch?
So I became vegan back at the start of 2013, and I'd been living in France for about 6 months at this point, and I'd been consuming a lot of animal products, so dairy, the usual cheese and milk, and I think I just had a bit of a light switch moment where I sort of analyzed the effects it was having on my body. So I think it was the health aspect, first of all, and sort of parallel to that, it was the first time I'd been living with a pet. So it was a little dog called Lucky, and bonded so much with Lucky, and just sort of had a moment where I thought to myself, why do we treat some animals, you know, as pets and with love, but then exploit other animals? And I just couldn't justify that anymore. And so very shortly after that, I sort of made the decision that veganism was the way for me.
Wow, beautiful. And you must have started blogging right away then, hey, right after you became vegan?
Yes, very, very shortly after that. And I have to say I was motivated by all my family and members to start the blog. You know, the stereotypical questions you get when you go vegan, such as, what are you going to eat now? And surely you must be starving. And so starting the blog was a way for me to almost prove a point, but in a fun, informative way. And so I began sharing recipes on there, and then the blog has just sort of grown in its own way over the years.
Wow, that's great. Were you making videos right from the very beginning as well, or did that kind of come later?
That came much later, actually. I have to say I thought about making videos at the start, but was too scared to put myself out there. And so it took a little bit of time to build up the courage, and then slowly but surely I began posting recipe videos and just began to be a bit more consistent with it, because I found it was a really great medium of reaching more people with sort of the message of vibrant vegan Nigerian food.
Cool. So lots of the recipes on your blog are traditional Nigerian dishes. And did you find many of these dishes easy to veganize, or are there many dishes in Nigerian cuisine that are already vegan?
So I found that the dishes were quite easy to veganize. In Nigerian cuisine, we don't eat a lot of dairy or eggs normally with our meals. And so once you strip that out, all you're left with is a very plant-heavy meal with a side of meat, or with sort of meat incorporated into the dish. And so by finding alternatives, plant-based alternatives, I was able to veganize the dishes. So, for example, we have a special dish called pepper soup, and normally that would contain different parts of, you know, the animal, and it's a very rich broth. So what I did to veganize that was to obviously take out all the animal products, replace it with succulent vegetables, really hearty root vegetables in particular, such as yam and cassava, and it worked really well. I was able to maintain the flavors and was able to sort of get my family and friends to approve.
That's so cool. So do you have any other favorite dishes?
I do. I really love jollof rice, which is a very popular West African dish. It's a rice cooked in a lovely stew of blended peppers, tomatoes, and spices. It's relatively easy to make, but it really does pack a punch. And Yeah, it's one of the ones I always dig out when I have, you know, friends over or I have a party, you know, that I'm planning. Yeah.
Awesome. So do you get much commentary from fellow Nigerians on your blog or your social media? Like, what has the response been like?
I've had very mixed responses from fellow Nigerians. So when I started out, a lot of people were intrigued at first and quite curious, you know, to see how it all worked. And so that was very positive. But I have definitely had a few people sort of raise their eyebrows a little bit and say, vegan Nigerian seems like an oxymoron. I don't see how that works. And I can't really imagine myself ever going vegan. But I would say, like, over the years, as time has gone on, I've seen more and more Nigerians actually embrace the concept. And even if, you know, they say I could never be fully vegan, they do try to incorporate more vegan meals into their week. And I think, yeah, little steps, but yeah, I think it is slowly starting to have an impact.
Hey, Tomi, Amir here. I'm sort of a struggling social mediaite, I'm struggling to gain followers and things like that, but it seems like you've managed to grow your social media following quite large. Would you have any tips for somebody that is looking to do that in terms of how you did it? What advice would you give somebody to who wants to grow their social media following?
Well, my number one tip is to be consistent. So when you're constantly producing content, that's the best way to sort of put yourself in people's, you know, sphere and get them to start sharing. And of course, the content does matter. So for example, when I started out, I was by no means, you know, fantastic at it. I used my phone camera. Everything wrong that you can possibly think of, I probably did. But the more you do it, the easier it does become and the more you're able to sort of find connections. So you meet fellow bloggers, you meet other food enthusiasts or whatever field you're in, and they're able to support you and you're able to support them. And it just builds on itself. So it takes time, it takes consistency, and just not giving up, really.
So, Tomi, you seem to be keeping pretty busy, not only with your blog and your YouTube channel, but also putting on various events in London, such as your Airbnb dining experience. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this has been one of the most exciting bits of actually starting my blog. A few years into it, I began to host sort of live events where I would hire out a restaurant space for an evening and invite people to try my food. And it was just a really exciting way of getting people to experience the food in real life, you know, moving away from the screen and actually coming together to enjoy the food. And it's been absolutely wonderful. And so once I started doing the events, I was approached by Airbnb to set up a dining experience for travelers using the app. And I've been doing that for just over a year now. And it's been fantastic. I've met people from different parts of the world, including Canada, the US, Sweden, you name it. And yeah, it's been fantastic. Just the number of people who are even interested in plant-based foods and being able to sort of experience it during their time here in London.
That's awesome. So do you do these events like at your home or do you have another venue that you use?
So for the Airbnb experiences in particular, I do that at home. And that's to create more of an intimate environment. You know, I usually keep it to between 2 to 4 people at a time, so it's not too crazy. But when I do have my sort of big pop-up events, that's when I hire out the space. And I've had numbers up to about 40 people in a night, which is exhausting, but a lot of fun.
I'm curious, Tomi, if you go back to Nigeria often and if somebody is looking to travel out to Nigeria, if it is possible to travel there as a vegan and how difficult it would be to do that.
So I actually haven't been to Nigeria since becoming vegan, but I do plan to this year. And I have to say I'm not as apprehensive as, you know, probably I would have been a few years ago because now veganism is slowly starting to catch on. Nigeria had its very first vegan restaurant open up.
Wow.
And it's called Veggie Victory. For anyone who's traveling into Nigeria, check it out. It's in Lagos and they have a fully vegan menu and it looks wonderful and I'm really looking forward to trying it.
That's awesome. So do you have any favorite vegan food spots in London?
There are so many here. there's a wonderful sort of fried chicken shop, a vegan fried chicken shop called Temple of Hackney. And that's
heard
really
of it.
Popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're into sort of your vegan junk food, then that's one to try. Or if you want to go down the more healthy route, there's Wild Food Cafe in Covent Garden. And I would definitely recommend that anyone coming into London try that. They make incredibly beautiful food, rich in nutrients. And so you feel good about eating the food, but it also, you know, tastes fantastic as well. So it's a win-win.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So what's next for you? I understand you have a little giveaway going on your blog.
Yeah, so this is actually to celebrate my blog turning 5. And so I'm hosting a giveaway, giving away 5 sort of vegan-themed presents. One is a vegan beauty box. The other is packs of vegan rice. The other is a vegan gadget, which is a tofu press, which is sort of an amazing addition to any kitchen. I'm also giving away a cookbook. And finally, I'm also giving away 2 free tickets to one of my next events. So, yeah, it's something for everyone in there. And it's been a great way of also engaging with my audience and also sort of showing how grateful I am that they are there as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what are the events that you have coming up?
So I have an event coming up in April. It's going to be a collaborative event with a fellow chef who's from Cameroon. And so it's going to be African themed and more details to come. We still haven't quite revealed every single detail, but it's going to be quite spectacular, and I'm really looking forward to it.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Animal Voices today, Tomi. It's been lovely talking with you, and I can't wait to try some of your recipes.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So for our listeners, be sure to check out Tomi's blog, The Vegan Nigerian, at vegannigerian.com. You can also connect with her on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube.
Something that she sort of touched on that I've always been curious about, I was really interested in traveling to India. I still am. And then I looked up, traveling vegan in India, and a lot of blogs that I looked up, basically all of them, like, fully vegan blogs, all say that, you know, they sort of just sacrificed veganism while they were there and, you know, wow, just decided to, you know, it'd be okay to just have a little bit of dairy because they didn't have any choice. And I wonder what you guys think about that, traveling somewhere where you don't really have much option. Would you, like, go as far out of your way as possible to get that option? Because I think I would.
Yeah, but I think I would too, honestly. And I feel like nowadays it's... I hear people say that occasionally too, yeah. And I'm a little skeptical. I feel like honestly it's getting easier and easier now to find things. You know, we have, for example, the website Happy Cow, which also has an app, and it's amazingly helpful. I mean, it's basically just a resource of vegan restaurants and vegan friendly stores and whatnot all over the world. Like, any place you can think of, there's probably listings there, including, you know, kind of remote places. And so, and I feel like in a place like, you know, in places around Asia, there's, you know, a lot of wonderful plant-based foods to be found, fresh fruit and everything.
And I found it surprising about India too, because, like, there's so many cultures in India that are vegetarian. Obviously dairy is pretty prevalent, but there's a lot of dishes that are that completely exclude dairy, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Cuisine, so. I think it takes some preparation. I think that you couldn't go there without having researched and prepared.
For sure.
You know, and I think some people do make that mistake.
Right.
They go traveling and they haven't done any research.
Kind of
they haven't prepped. You have to make sure that you have, you know, the resources that you need. And maybe, you know, there's also an app actually called the Vegan Passport. And there's a little thing that you can get from the Vegan Society, a little booklet called the Vegan Passport. And it basically has pages and all these different languages that sort of detail your dietary restrictions. So it says, you know, I'm vegan and I can eat this and this, but I can't eat this and this.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So can you make a dish for me? So if you're going to a place where you don't speak the language, you can show people something like that.
Perfect.
And so I feel like, again, there's resources, and it may be a little bit of a challenge. It may be a little bit.
And I think you touched on it. The language barrier was kind of a thing that a lot of these blogs mentioned, that they couldn't tell these people how to tell them to take dairy out of the dish or whatever. Definitely something you should research before you go traveling somewhere you're not sure about the options.
I agree, it's just something you have to account for in advance and prepare for.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Coast Salish Territories.
And now let's get into some events. This Sunday, February the 18th, there is a rally for affordable housing happening downtown. Several local groups, including previous Animal Voices guest Pets OKBC, are gathering downtown at Jackpool Plaza at Canada Place to rally for affordable housing action from the government. Our city's housing crisis has spread rapidly through the province with devastating effects for individuals and families, including non-human family members, companion animals whose interests are chronically neglected by both landlords and the law. Excessive no pets policies have led to record numbers of animals being surrendered to shelters every day in BC and are leading many people to choose to live out of their cars or on the street to avoid being separated from their companion animals. So Pets OK BC will be taking part in this rally to stand against excessive and harmful no pets policies and call for affordable housing for all. So again, that's this Sunday, February 18th at Jackpool Plaza, 2 to 5 p.m. And we've had Pets OK BC on the show before. You can listen to our interview with them on our website, animalvoices.org, or learn more about them on their website, petsok.ca.
This is such an important issue in our city because the rent costs, the housing prices have just gone up astronomically. It's so expensive. And we were talking about this before the show a little bit. It's often next to impossible to find housing that accepts companion animals. I mean, that's why Pets OK BC exists, because it's extremely difficult. You and I both, Sinead, were saying that we have resisted adopting companion animals because it's, at this point, it's just very difficult, you know, if we want to move or anything like that. To find any place to live that's decent and affordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see the pictures that you post of those dogs that you mentioned from the Northwest Territories SPCA.
Yeah.
And I would love to adopt a dog, but I can't risk it in this city. Mm-hmm. So it's an issue for humans and non-human animals alike.
Yeah, it needs to change.
Yeah, so that's Sunday. On Monday, February 19th, it's the Vancouver Vegan Drinks Meetup for February. Join Vancouver Vegan Drinks for drinks and food at Vancouver's largest vegetarian bar, the Black Lodge, in their new location on East Broadway, near Main Street there. And they've got poutine veggie dogs. That's pretty much all you need to know.
Yeah.
A hot dog and poutine combined with no tortured animals involved, it can be done, and it's delicious. So, in addition to the food at the Black Lodge, there are lots of great people who show up for these drinks meetups, and the event is open to anyone 19 or older. There's no cover or fees. So just swing by and get to know like-minded individuals over beers and food at the Black Lodge this Monday. And let's see, Saturday, February 24th, Liberation BC is celebrating National Cupcake Day with a bake sale fundraiser for Rasta Sanctuary. Rasta is an excellent animal sanctuary in Chemainus on Vancouver Island, and Liberation BC is looking for people to both bring cupcakes and buy cupcakes, with all proceeds going to Rasta. This is an animal-friendly event, of course, so if you're bringing cupcakes, please ensure that they contain no animal products. And the bake sale runs from 2 to 4 p.m. at Grandview Park on Commercial Drive. Bring cupcake donations no later than 1:45, so they got time to set up. And if you want to just come by and eat cupcakes, then just bring cash and an appetite. So if you like cupcakes and you like helping animals, and who doesn't like those things, then come out to Grandview Park on Commercial Drive, 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, February the 24th. You can find more information at liberationbc.org. Just one more quick reminder then about Joanne MacArthur coming back to Vancouver on March 17th, Saturday, March 17th, 2 to 4 p.m. at UBC Robson Square, presenting 15 years of photojournalism and animal advocacy. You can find more information on Joanne at weanimals.org.
So as we get your feature interview ready today, we're just going to throw to a quick song. This is a song that Elise actually played on the show for the first time, and we played it on the show a whole bunch. It's called Tofu and Greens by Denzel St. Clair.
Tofu and greens, give me some fried tofu and greens with a side order of rice and fava beans. Tofu and greens, I'm on a new veggie regime. I've got myself a new source of protein. I got tired of all the beef about foot and mouth disease. No more fish and fowl, pork and crazy cows, just give me some tofu, please. Tofu and greens, give me some fried tofu and greens with a side order of rice and fava beans. Well, I've given up beef, I don't eat fish. I've made some adjustments to my favorite dish. No more chicken, no more ham. No thanks to turkey, bye-bye lamb. And to think the two things that I said I'd never do were to give up eating any meat and to start to eat tofu. But I made my decision, try something new. And I'm digging my veggies and loving tofu. Tofu, slice it, dice it, fry with rice. Tofu, marinate even overnight, make it taste just right. Tofu, slice it and put in the oven to broil. Tofu, top with sun-dried tomatoes and olive oil. You can make it simple or go haute cuisine. There are so many ways to enjoy this product of the world's eighth wonder, the soya bean. Tofu, toss it in a salad, stir it in a stew. Tofu, you can have it with chili or ratatouille.
My next guest today is Nikki Wright, Wildlife Rehabilitation Specialist and Executive Director of the African Pangolin Working Group. Nikki manages the rescue and rehabilitation of most of South Africa's pangolin poaching cases and advises authorities on best practices when dealing with poached pangolins. Hello, Nikki, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Here. Hi.
Pangolins are not a well-known animal in our region of the world, and many of our listeners may not know what they are. So to start, can you just give us a brief overview of what a pangolin is, what they look like, what they eat, where they live, etc.?
Yes, of course. There are 8 species of pangolin in the world. There are 4 species in Asia, and there are 4 species here on the African continent. They're the only scaled mammal on Earth. So it's a mammal with scales. It has its live young. It has one pup every sort of 18 months or so, every 2 years. And they're very specialist feeders. They're myrmecophagous, which means they only eat ants or termites.
Wow. So why was the African Pangolin Working Group formed, and what kind of work do you do?
Okay, so we formed in about 2011 because, I'm a wildlife rehabilitation specialist, and we were getting more and more pangolins in that have been confiscated off the trade, off the illegal trade. And we started to realize that there was something going on. And a couple of other people, researchers and geneticists and people like that, realize, the same thing at the same time. And we formed, the African Pangolin Working Group, and basically we're six directors. We each work in different fields, so rehabilitation, research, geneticists, those kind of things, and we sort of basically put in our spare time work towards the preservation and conservation of pangolins.
Great. So what are some of the main threats to pangolins as a species?
Well, the illegal trade. They're the most trafficked mammal on Earth currently, which is you know, really quite an overwhelming thought when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
We say that they're the most trafficked mammal you've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very difficult dealing with it because you can't count them. They're so elusive and shy. You know, people have been going into the bush, into Kruger, you know, park, for instance, for years and never seen one. So, you know, seeing a pangolin in the wild is considered really, you know, quite an achievement and quite a blessing and an honor and all that kind of thing. So, you know, and here are people able to poach them, and traffic them at such high numbers that the actual species is on the brink of extinction.
Wow. So what are some of the reasons why pangolins are poached or hunted to such a great extent?
Well, in Asia, they're used as a traditional medicine. So the scales are used. The scales are actual keratin, much the same as rhino horn. And they're used for much the same reasons as rhino horn are used in Asia.
Hmm.
And because the Asian species are very hard to find because there's been such a high demand for their scales and for their meat, they do use their meat as well. Their attention has now turned to our African species. So there've been huge volumes of scales being shipped from Africa to Asia. And last year, there were something like 46 tons of African pangolin scale confiscated in Asia.
Wow.
That's just the amount that was detected. You know, we don't know what's gone through unnoticed.
Mm-hmm. So how does the African Pangolin Working Group respond to some of these issues?
Well, we work very closely with law enforcement officers here in South Africa. We train magistrates and prosecutors about pangolins, about the law that can be applied. The Animal Protection Act can be applied when prosecuting offenders. So we do a lot of work with the judiciary. We do a lot of education and just general awareness, so bringing people's attention to the species and the threat that they face.
That's great. So why do you feel it's important to conserve pangolins?
People often ask me this, and they're just such an enigmatic species. We know so little about them. They've been on the planet for 80 million years. And they haven't had to change their form because they're so perfectly evolved for what they do.
Mm.
They roll into a ball to protect themselves. Even adult lion can't really open a big pangolin once it's rolled into a ball. They're incredibly well protected with that armor of all those scales. And they're so specialist. You know, we don't even really know much about the niche that they hold in the environment. So, and we're sort of seeing this beautiful special animal slip through our fingers. You know, I often say that once you've seen a pangolin or looked a pangolin in the eye, they just sort of seem to bewitch you and cast a spell over you, and you're just kind of drawn towards them. And it's just something I feel very strongly about, is preserving them and trying to do all I can to find out as much as we can about them.
It's beautiful.
Nikki Amir here. I was wondering if the fact that these pangolins are so unknown is something that also needs to be addressed, like if creating awareness for the pangolin will help them because they're so unknown that maybe these poachers have a bit of an upper hand that way with poaching these animals.
Do you mean that the poachers are finding them in the wild?
That and also just the fact that, again, like people, like a lot of times when we hear stories about, like, say, the rhinos being poached or elephants being poached, because there's such a global awareness about these things, there seems to be more being yes. done about them.
Yes, and also, you know, the elephant and rhino are sort of, you know, so big, so everybody knows about them, mm-hmm. whereas pangolins are so difficult to even see in the wild. So as I say, that's why we often say the most poached mammal that you've never heard of before. So, creating awareness is absolute key to conserving the species as a whole.
Is there anything else that you wish more people knew about pangolins?
I wish more people just knew what pangolins are mm-hmm. and what they sort of represent, how incredibly specialist they are. You know, special niche that they hold. They're sort of unlike any other mammal, or unlike any other animal actually on Earth. So incredibly unique that they definitely are worth preserving. And I wish, you know, more people would know about the species and feel the same way. And if they knew about the species, I'm sure they would feel the same way.
Outside of what your group does, the African Pangolin Working Group, obviously here we've got local issues with animals that are not endangered but are kept in cruel conditions and things like that. And something we found that has helped a lot of these animals is, you know, local activism and more sort of guerrilla-level activism. Do you find that kind of thing happening in your neck of the woods with the pangolins? Is there activism from people that live there that care about these pangolins?
Amir, yeah, not to the extent that you would have in Canada or the US, definitely. So we have sort of groups, activist groups here in South Africa, but we have so many issues that face our wildlife here that sort of they spread quite thin on the ground, I think.
Hmm.
So there aren't any particularly that are fighting for pangolin, but there are groups, you know, here and worldwide, I think that are now including pangolin in their fight because they're becoming aware of the threats that the species face. So it's not only, you know, preserving or fighting against ivory, protecting rhino, and fighting against the lion bone trade, for instance, but the pangolin are now being included in that critical group. So yeah, it's slowly happening, but not obviously in the great force that we'd like to see.
Mm-hmm. So Nikki, you've been rescuing and rehabilitating pangolins for years, as far as I understand. Have there been any particularly memorable experiences?
Oh, you know, every single animal that comes in is so unique. It's quite interesting. They're such benign, tolerant creatures. They each have their own personality. One of the first animals I ever dealt with was a large male, and they've usually been in captivity for about at least a week. So, and they wouldn't have been offered you know, anything to eat. Obviously, they're very specialist. They don't eat anything in captivity, and they often don't have any water.
Mm.
So these animals are really compromised by the time they come in. And this particular animal, I had sort of examined him, no serious injuries, was trying to offer him some water, and I poured some water into the palm of my hand, and he almost grabbed my hand with his front paws. You know, they've got these very strange front paws, which just have these huge claws on, and he pulled my hand towards him, and this long, sticky tongue started coming in and out of his mouth, just lapping the water out of the palm of my hand.
Wow.
And I was sort of crouched on the floor with this unbelievable animal drinking out of the palm of my hand with tears pouring down my face because Aww. It was just so incredibly moving. He'd been so subjected to such, you know, horrors for God knows how long, you know, while he was in the trade, and here he was actually holding a human hand and drinking out of it. So it was an incredibly moving experience. So that was just one of them that will always stay with me.
Wow, that's so lovely. And you actually are involved in rescue of many different species, isn't that right?
Yes. So I work with all the indigenous wildlife that we have here, yeah.
Wow, that's great. So
I was wondering, actually, you said that they don't eat when they're in captivity. I was wondering if their particular habits and things like that are what keeps them from showing up in places like zoos and in the pet trade and stuff. A lot of other animals we hear about because of those situations. So what has kept the pangolin from showing up in zoos and other unfortunate situations like that all over the world?
Well, I think they're saving grace. So what's kept them out of zoos, thankfully, is the fact that they don't eat in captivity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we have them in the rehabilitation setting, we have to, you know, either artificially feed them if they're very compromised by means of, you know, a nasogastric tube or something like that, or we take them out foraging.
Wow.
So that means that every night, because they're nocturnal, we're out in the felt or what would you call it, the bush or the grassland, walking them and finding the species of termites and ants that they prefer, and depending on which region they come from, so whether they come from the desert or whether they come from the bush felt, they prefer different types of termites or ants. So they can be very specialist within that, you know, within that diet. So, you know, keeping them in a zoo would be just about impossible. Our pangolin that we get here in southern Africa, which is the Temminck's ground pangolin. I think there are some species in Asia that they do keep and feed with an artificial diet. But anyway, you know, with SAPI last year having uplisted all 8 species of pangolin to Appendix 1, there's absolutely no trade with pangolin allowed anywhere. So it would be very difficult to keep them in zoos. And certainly it would increase the penalties if people are found with pangolins illegally, like for instance in the exotic pet trade, which, right, you know, we all abhor. Mm-hmm. And pangolins wouldn't survive in the exotic pet trade just because of their specialist habits.
Right, so that's fascinating. So what can we and our listeners do to help save these animals?
I think spread awareness would be great. And also, you know, if anybody finds it in their heart to support causes like the African Pangolin Working Group, is just to make sure that you're supporting a legitimate organization. You know, there's so many organizations, you know, collecting money for rhinos and collecting money for elephants and that kind of thing, that I think a lot of people don't think to check whether those organizations are actually legitimate and actually collecting and giving the money to you know, concerns that are dealing directly with the animals. So there's a lot of bogus scam organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that would be something to look out for. I think just to spread awareness so that people know what the animal is. I know, you know, for people living in your neck of the woods, for instance, a pangolin is sort of so out of your kind of context, as it were, as much as a bear would be out of mine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just because we live on different ends of the planet and have such different, you know, animals in our neck of the woods, doesn't mean we all need to work together and you know, globally help each other save the species that occur. So it's just, yeah, I think it's that. It's working as a global community to make sure that animals like pangolins survive.
That's great advice. Well, thank you very much for coming on Animal Voices today, Nikki, and for sharing your knowledge and experience with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. It's been quite interesting to be speaking to people in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. And welcome to Pangolins.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, for sure. So for our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about pangolins or about the African Pangolin Working Group or to make a donation to their research and conservation work, visit africanpangolin.org. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, February 23rd at noon. We'll have more great animal-themed programming for your listening pleasure. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Now we'll leave you with a song. Here's the Lagos City Chorale from Nigeria with a live performance of Animal Carol. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.